Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of the Men with the Golden Tongues.
I love that name.
I absolutely love that name, man. I love it. You have to thank your wife for that name, man. It is an excellent pun. I'm your host, Micah, joined by Brad.
Hello.
We are a couple of James Bond fans, and like most of our long-form movie reviews, we're going to go step by step and review every single Bond movie.
It's going to be great. It's going to be pretty great. We've been wanting to do this for about a year now, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And just timing hasn't worked out, but we found some time. This is going to be a lot of fun. Like Micah said, we're two extremely huge James Bond fanatics. You know, we've seen every movie multiple times.
Including some of the unofficial movies.
Right.
Yeah. We haven't decided whether or not we will give Never Say Never Again the time of day.
I have a feeling we probably will.
Okay.
But we'll see. We've got lots of time to figure out if we're going to do that or not. So
yeah, we do. So if you're listening to this, you are a member. You are a premium member of the Nerdpocalypse Network. We thank you for your $5, and we hope that we are going to give you something a little more. Just trying to add to that value, you know. So what this is this will be once a month, and. Since Brad and I, we are men of the people for the people, we will be having a couple of guests on, you know, every now and again, some of our listeners, some folks in our podcast family. If you want to be on, look, the line is kind of long. So if you want to be on, you got to let me know, and you got to let me know which movie you want, and we'll decide from there. But yeah, man, let's get to it. What was your first James Bond movie, and yeah, how did you get into it?
Well, so growing up when I was a kid, these were movies that my dad watched. Like, he watched Star Wars and James Bond, and I was like, those are dad movies. I don't care about those. And then it was 1996, and GoldenEye had just been released on VHS, and I remember we went to the video rental store, the local mom and pop video rental store, not even like a Blockbuster, and rented a copy of GoldenEye. And he says, "Hey, watch this movie," and I was transfixed, man. That was Pierce Brosnan's first shot at the role. It was an amazing action movie. I loved every second of it. I mean, because I'd really never seen anything like a James Bond movie before. Just the combination of action and sex and humor and everything like that. Cut, you know, the Bond formula transfixed me. And then from there, I immediately started going to the library to check out the older Bond films. And by the time a couple months had passed, I'm pretty sure I'd watched all the ones up to that point. And I was knee deep in fandom from that moment on.
I have a similar story. My dad didn't watch James Bond movies. He's just weird like that, I guess. but in 1997, GoldenEye 64 for the Nintendo 64 was released. And once I got past that first gate, because I just didn't know how to get past it for some reason, I just had a brain fart when I was playing that, when I first played that game. But once I finally got past that first gate, I was like, wow, this game is really, I really, really like this game. I'm having a really good time with it. It's based on a movie. Let me check out this movie. And yeah, GoldenEye, that was my first movie. And it started my love affair with James Bond. And like you, I was like, wow, this is cool. Let me check out all the other ones. And I went back and watched all the Sean Connerys, and I'm like, wow, these are really good. Like, they run the gamut from like really good to great to eh. the George Lazenby movie, that poor guy, he gets a bad rap.
He does. We'll talk about him in a couple of months.
You know who else we're going to talk about?
Your favorite.
Roger freaking Moore. You people wait until we start talking about Roger Moore Bond movies. You're going to hear a lot. I'm not a yeller and a screamer. You're going to hear a lot of yelling and screaming from me. All the way up to Angsty Dalton and Cool Breeze Brosnan and Thuggish Ruggish Daniel Craig. So I love him, man.
I just remember when I started, you know, looking after him after I watched GoldenEye, I couldn't believe there were so many. Yeah. Like I was, you know, the GoldenEye was the 16th or no 17th Bond film in the series. So like it shocked me that there were so many that I never even heard of. You know, everyone had heard of Goldfinger and Dr. No and stuff like that, but you know, there was a lot that I had no clue about.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into it. Open with the famous gun barrel scene. This scene always kind of freaked me out. Like it's a staple in every Bond film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell has a camera in the barrel of a gun?
Well, so actually Maurice Binder, who designed most of the title sequences for the films, basically he did them all up until his death. Actually, not even up until his death. No, he was dead. Up until GoldenEye came out, he did them all except for From Rush with Love and Goldfinger. So he was a famous title designer in Hollywood. He wanted to look for something innovative. So he actually took a pinhole camera and pointed it down a gun barrel to get this shot.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really cool, man.
Yeah, it's very cool. Now, here's a fun trivia fact for you, Micah. Who was the first man to play James Bond on screen?
Oh, I know it's not Sean Connery.
It's not.
Wasn't there a television series?
Well, no, I'm not even talking about that. It's in the movies. Who was the first man to appear as Bond on screen?
I do not know.
It was actually stuntman, like lead stunt coordinator Bob Simmons, who was James Bond in that gun barrel sequence. It was him up until I think Thunderball was the first time that Connery was actually part of that.
Oh, wow.
That's so fun, cool, fun bar trivia. If you ever want to make a quick buck or something.
Well, there you go. And apparently, this stuntman, he knows how to walk. Sometimes I can't remember if it was Thunderball was the first one, but I remember those James Bond walking down the gun, you know, walking straight and then turning. Some of them look like they're tripping up, or some of them look like they're kind of one left, right. Left. Oh man. Well, I mean, no,
my favorite is, so like with Roger Moore, he was the first one to actually do the turn and shoot. Like Bob Simmons and Connery, they do like they walk down the camera and then they like do like a frog hop and turn to the camera and shoot the gun. made me laugh.
It's not very graceful, is it? Like it's kind of like I'm gonna jump and then wildly swing my arm. I'm gonna telegraph this gunshot so much that anybody who's looking down the barrel of this gun has ample time to shoot and kill.
But still, this was a really innovative, and like this would obviously become a Bond signature. I mean, it's an iconic thing, you know what I mean? Like, and no one had ever really done anything like that before. It actually kind of bothered me in the Craig movies. With Quantum of Solace and Skyfall, they stuck this at the end of the film, which I didn't care for.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Like, I get, you know, you're kind of trying to reboot the franchise, but, you know, tradition.
Yeah, don't fix what ain't broken.
There you go. The opening scenes come on, and this is like some 60s nonsense. Like, there are a bunch of circles and a couple of squares,
some seizure dots on the screen.
Yeah, man, like this is some 60s stuff right here.
Now, so obviously for each of these movies, we're going to talk about the theme song from each one. Well, for Dr. No, they hadn't quite, you know, come up with the quote-unquote Bond formula yet, so the theme song for this one is actually the James Bond theme song.
Which, I mean, look, every single movie could open like this, you know, 60s psychedelic dots aside, but with this music, and I'd be okay with it. Now, don't get me wrong. I like all the, you know, the Bond themes, the movie themes, but the Bond theme, man, I mean, it's classic.
It is, but if, so, so. But here's the funny thing about this movie. So, the Bond theme is classic, and it's the kind of movie that, like, if you could have a soundtrack in your life, like, yeah, that would be the song that you'd want as you walked around and did stuff, right? Yeah. But in this movie, what happens in the future movies is that, like, they have the theme from that movie, and then musical cues from that theme find their way into the soundtrack from the film, and they reserve the Bond theme for when Bond is doing something extremely Bond-like.
Yeah.
In this movie, because they didn't have anything else, they use the Bond theme actually too much.
Oh, it's all over the place.
Yeah, like anytime he's doing something remotely spy-worthy, yeah, they drop this theme in.
Like driving a car.
Right. And like there's a cool scene later in the film where he's kind of putting tripwires around his apartment, but he's just walking around, or his hotel room, but he's just walking around doing that, but they drop this theme like in very inconspicuously into that scene. So it does get overused a little bit in the film. Obviously they scale it back in the future, which is the right thing. But hey, you know, they knew they had this amazing theme song, so they wanted to pop it in wherever possible, I guess.
I guess so, man. And look, it's iconic. You know, as soon as you hear boom, 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 like, you know it. Like, you're ready to pull out your Walther and start shooting dudes.
So, yes.
It's great, man. After the weird, weird psychedelic, you know, theme, we dissolve into a scene where three blind men are wandering into a country club. And at the club, we see a group of men playing cards. One of the men's name is Strangeways.
Strangeways. Yes.
I always call him Strangeways, but
it's, well, any regular listener of our shows knows your propensity for mispronouncing names.
I don't know why I'm even here, because I don't know how to speak properly. I speak English good, not well. Strangeways is the British intelligence station chief in Jamaica. That's a hell of a gig. And he is ambushed by the three blind men who are known as, they are a trio of assassins known as the Three Blind Mice. So the assassins go to Strangway's place, and they steal a file on Dr. No.
Right. So Strangway's. Yeah. So they basically, like, you know, after Strangway's gets killed, they cut to his secretary, phoning into London basically. And then she sees, out the window, the assassins are outside, and they kill her as well. Break in. All they steal is two files. Like Micah said, one is for Dr. No. The other is for Crab Key. And obviously, this early on, we don't know the significance of those two pieces of information, basically.
Right. So news of all this suspicious activity in Jamaica reaches London. Then we cut to a gambling hall where a man is looking for James Bond. Here we get the introduction of our hero as he is just beating up on a woman in a card game.
Bonk. I need another 1,000.
I admire your courage, Miss...
Trench. Sylvia Trench. I admire your luck, Mr...
Bond. James Bond.
The woman's name is Sylvia Trench, and Bond kind of flirts with her for a little bit, and then he rolls out.
So, funny fact about Sylvia Trench, she was actually originally envisioned to be like a recurring character in every film. Where, like, you know, it's, and we see this in From Russia with Love, but then she's not in the movies after that. But basically, she's supposed to be like James Bond's like main squeeze back in London. Yeah. And he's always hanging out with her at the beginning of each film, only to get pulled away on a mission.
A mission.
Yes.
Right. No, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So Bond heads to the office, and we meet another staple of the franchise, Miss Moneypenny. What was the actress's name that played Moneypenny?
Lois Maxwell.
Yes, Lois Maxwell. I read somewhere that Lois Maxwell was read for Sylvia Trench, and the other woman who played Sylvia Trench read for Moneypenny.
That's actually very true. And it was actually Lois Maxwell who went to the director, Terrence Young, and said that she would much rather play Moneypenny if she had the option to. I don't think she realized at the time that this would become a 20-year gig for her. Good for her. She chose very wisely.
Yeah, she did, man.
Originally that it was supposed to be that way. The roles were supposed to be reversed. Now, another fun Moneypenny story. So apparently when the character came along, her, Sean Connery, and Terrence Young all devised like a backstory for Bond and Moneypenny, which kind of informed their very flirtatious relationship. So basically what they said is that many years before, when she was just in the secretary pool and he was just an intelligence agent, they had a fling where they went away together for a weekend. And though they still were very fond of each other, they knew that they couldn't continue it forward because it would cause, one or both of them to be forced to leave MI6. So that was the story they came up with, and that's kind of where their relationship is grounded and why Bond is so flirtatious with her, and she reciprocates as well.
So what you're saying is James Bond is like Jerry Seinfeld, and Moneypenny is like Elaine?
Kind of, sort of. There's always that undercurrent of affection there between the two.
My name's Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld! Wow, that's cool, man. Yeah. I didn't know that. And it makes sense.
Absolutely.
Like they love each other, in that way.
They're fond of each other.
Yeah. They care about one another. Not the trollops that James usually beds and then just kinda forgets about in 2 years when the next movie comes out.
Yeah, their relationship does take some weird turns, because like there's some movies where she's actually like helping conceal his dalliances.
Yeah,
let's say, which is very strange. But like I said, we'll have plenty of time to examine that relationship, because Lois Maxwell would remain in that role all the way through A View to a Kill. So
yeah. Let's see. So Bond flirts with Moneypenny, and then he heads into M's office. While there, Bond is given a new gun by Major Boothroyd.
Oh, I love this scene so much.
And Bond just doesn't like this gun. He's just like, screw it.
If you carry a 00 number, it means you're licensed to kill, not get killed. And another thing. Since I've been head of MI7, there's been a 40% drop in 00 operative casualties, and I want it to stay that way. You'll carry the Walter. Unless, of course, you prefer to go back to standard intelligence duties.
No, sir. I would not.
Then from now on, you carry a different gun. Show him, Amra.
Walter PPK. 7.65 mil with a delivery like a brick through a plate glass window. Takes a Brausch silencer with very little reduction in muzzle velocity. The American CIA swear by them.
Thank you, Major Boothroyd.
Thank you, sir. Good night, sir.
Any questions, 007?
No, sir.
All right, then. Best of luck.
Thank you, sir.
Double O seven.
Sir?
Just leave the Beretta.
It's really humorous. So first of all, Bernard Lee as M. I really like Bernard Lee as M. He's not my favorite portrayal of the character. I think Judi Dench definitely would take that. But Bernard Lee is like a great, no-nonsense father figure. He knows what Bond's all about. Like, he knows his tricks. He knows, his charisma, that kind of thing, and doesn't fall into that at all.
Yeah, and it really shows in this scene. Like, he's a perfect, authority figure foil for Bond, because he's not, like you said, he's not James, give me the gun. Yeah, James, come on now. James, leave Money Penny alone. You got work to do.
So in the books, the reason why he switched, so in the books, he used a Beretta at first. And then for those who don't know, the movies are not filmed in the same order necessarily that the books were written in. And From Russia with Love actually comes before Dr. No in the literary line. And he suffered an injury because his Beretta jammed. Well, the real reason that Ian Fleming switched him from a Beretta to the PPK is because a fan of his, of the novels, who was actually a weapons expert, wrote into him and told him, you know, that there was no way that Bond would use a Beretta. Here's why. And basically made the case for why he should switch to the Walther PPK. And that guy's name was actually Boothroyd, and Ian Fleming essentially named the Quartermaster's character after him, because of that.
Wow. That's cool, man. That's really cool, man. Wow. You are a wealth of James Bond knowledge.
I am.
Good Lord.
I am.
I'm just sitting here like, oh, hey, hello, Major Boothroyd. That's Q's name.
So this is also technically the first appearance of Q. Not really, though.
Yeah. This guy, you know, God bless him. You don't count, buddy.
Right. This is Peter Burton played the role of Boothroyd here. Obviously, starting with From Rush With Love, it would be Desmond Llewellyn who would be Q.
Yeah, for like 30 years.
Right.
Like, good Lord. So, M tells James to investigate Strangway's disappearance and determine whether or not it's related to his cooperation with the American CIA on a case involving a disruption of a rocket launch from Cape Canaveral by radio jamming. Then we cut to a quick scene of Bond returning to his place to find Sylvia Trench just ready. Just ready. She's in a shirt playing mini golf.
And of course this is, you know, this happens a lot where, you know, Bond's like, "Oh, well, you know, I'm ready too, but I got to go." And she's like, "You got to go right now?" And he's like, "I've got an hour before I got to leave."
So Bond gets it in, and then we see him fly to Jamaica. When he lands, a female photographer tries to take Bond's picture, but he literally like gives her the hand, like to the hand,
puts his hat up to cover his face, basically.
Like, get out of my face.
He's no dummy,
right? He's like, I know what I'm doing. Get out of my face. Bond. Is also shadowed by two men from the airport. Now Bond meets a chauffeur,
mm-hmm.
and Bond does a little bit of investigating to find out if the chauffeur is legit. Turns out the chauffeur is not legit.
Yeah. So he finds out, cause when he meets the chauffeur is like, "Oh, I'm going to take you to the government house." And Bond's like, "Well, I got to make a phone call real quick. So hang tight." And so what happens is he goes into a phone booth and calls the government house and basically asks, he's like, "Hey, did you send a car for me?" And they're like, "No, like, we didn't think you'd want a car." And he's like, "Yeah, I don't." And meanwhile, he sees the driver talking to the photographer who attempted to take his picture. So he's no dummy.
That's right. James is no dummy. So James tells the chauffeur to take him for a ride. And while on the road, the chauffeur notices that they're being tailed, and they're being tailed by the two men from the airport. The chauffeur loses him. Am I correct in that?
So Bond, you know, he's like, "Hey, we're being followed." Bond's like, "Well, then you should shake that tail, buddy," and has him pull off the main road before the mysterious two men can catch up them.
So while off the beaten path, James interrogates the driver. They have a brief fight, and the driver's like, "Oh, all right, I'll tell you what you want to know. Just let me get a drag on this cig real quick." And it turns out the cigarette was laced, and the chauffeur killed himself because he would rather die than be
than tell Bond anything. Yeah,
which, you know, that is some quality like henchman. That's a quality henchman right
there. I mean, good help's hard to find.
Yeah, man. Like you need loyal henchmen to keep your secrets, man. Like people don't do that in movies anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone's willing to flip on everybody really fast. It's it's really lame.
Like you don't even have to torture. Like this dude took an ass whooping and was like, all right, you know what? Fuck this. Meanwhile, all you got to do is put some bass in your voice to goons nowadays. They're like, all right, I'll talk.
I love the little look of consternation he gave to the cigarettes. Like as he's like, oh, he's like, I really don't want to say shit, but my boss is going to be pissed if I do. Let me just fucking kill myself real quick.
Right.
Like before he bites down into it.
So Bond gets to Government House.
I love the quip that he makes when he pulls up, because he has the henchman, the dead henchman, in the back seat of the car. So he goes to like what would you call that, like the valet or the employee there, and he just looks at him. He's like, hey, make sure he doesn't get away. And it takes the valet a couple seconds to realize there's a dead guy in the back seat.
James Bond's a dick. He's a dick, man. Bond gets to Government House where he is a dick, and there he begins his investigation into Strangway's disappearance.
Mm.
During his investigation in Strangway's house, Bond sees a photograph of a boatman with Strangway's. He recognizes the boatman as one of the two men that shadowed him from the airport.
Now, real quick, before you get too far here, so in between Government House and then going to meet, because basically he meets with Strangway's bridge group as well, where you get to see Professor Dent for the first time, who would factor into things later. But there's also the scene that I mentioned earlier in the hotel room. So this is, I love scenes where Bond is just doing cool spy shit. So like as he's getting ready to leave the hotel, like he checks in and you know has his martini. That's also the first time you get to, well, he actually, sorry, where he says mix not stirred, the guy serving it to him, we wouldn't get shaken not stirred until the next one. But as he's getting ready to leave, he's like, you know what, someone's probably like, you know, trying to find out what's going on. I've already had to kill a guy. So he like takes some talcum powder, puts it on the clasps of his briefcase so he can see if anyone messed with it, takes a hair off his head and kind of smooths it out between his two closet doors so he can see if, you know, anyone opened the closet while it, like, shit like that is really cool. Like I love little touches like that, and you see him do things like this in future movies as well.
Yeah, most spy movies nowadays, they don't do things like this, or they don't show things like this, or they show them after the fact.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's not a lot of, you know, setup and payoff in this way. Because, like, look, spy movies nowadays have just kind of devolved into action sequence after action sequence. Like, there is no more, like doing spy shit. Like, because I imagine that being a spy could be kind of boring. You know right. what I mean? Like, as much as I like those Mission Impossible movies nowadays, like, no, spies aren't running up, jumping on top of planes and riding them into low orbit while hanging outside of it. Like, they're just not doing that.
No.
You know what I mean?
Like, there's a lot more detective work. Like, Bond is a detective first and foremost, so.
Right.
People forget that. And you know, later on, they would refer back to that stuff because, you know, it turns out somebody did search his room as while he was gone. So
exactly. So I lost my place. So Bond recognizes one of the men in the picture that he got from Strangway's house. Bond eventually finds out that guy's name is Quarrel. He finds out at a bridge game with Strangway's, you know, old peeps. He finds out that guy's name is Quarrel. And he tracks Quarrel down at like a port. Quarrel is a bit of a smartass. Like, Quarrel's not trying to help. Quarrel's like,
well, I mean, he saw Bond, you know, ride off earlier with 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 the bad guy. So he doesn't know if he should trust him or not. So
well, and at this point, we don't know if we can trust Quarrel. The audience doesn't know if we can trust Quarrel. So Quarrel convinces Bond to come into an abandoned room in this bar, and he's ambushed by Puss Feller. What the hell kind of name is Puss Feller?
I mean, it might be a Jamaican thing. I have no idea.
Goodness gracious, Jamaica. Puss?
Puss Feller. Who wrestles alligators, apparently. So Bond will not be able to break his grip, except he judo tosses him.
Right.
Like, almost immediately.
He immediately breaks it.
So Bond has the upper hand. He has both of them cornered, you know, draws his gun, you know, tells him to face the wall as he gets ready to escape, because he can't trust these guys at all.
Exactly. So he's backing up, and all of a sudden, the other guy who was tailing Bond at the airport shows up and has him at gunpoint. Well, it turns out that guy is CIA agent Felix Leiter.
Right. Up slowly and face that wall.
Hold it. Gently, bud, gently. Let's not get excited. Priskin. Interesting. Where were you measured for this, bud?
My tailor, Severo.
That's so. Mine's a guy in Washington. Felix Leiter, Central Intelligence Agency. You must be James Bond.
You mean we're fighting the same war?
Yeah, I spotted you at the airport, but when I saw you drive off the opposition, I figured I must be wrong. This is Quarrel. He's been helping me.
No hard feelings, I hope.
Only a sore hand. Glad to know you, Mr. Bond.
That's Puss Feller. He owns the place.
I hope he cooks better than he fights.
You can always find out.
Well, nobody died from my cooking yet.
And Felix would go on to... That character would go on to be Bond's, like, go-to, you know, USA contact for a while.
And this is funny, too, because so Felix Leiter, obviously, you know, is a recurring character. He kind of... He is in all the movies, like, where Bond exists in the ethereal now. He also, Felix Leiter also does. He's his American contemporary, basically. And then what's funny is so Jack Lord, who's probably most famous for the original Hawaii Five-0 TV show, plays Felix Leiter in this movie. They wanted to bring Jack Lord back, but he wanted a lot of money, and he also wanted top billing along with Sean Connery.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So of course, you know, the producers were like, well, nuts to that. Like, we'll just cast a new actor. So they would use this trope where, like, a mysterious man is following Bond, and you don't know who he is until he's revealed as Felix in many, many Bond movies going forward.
Like, Felix, you look a little different. So, yeah. Yeah, it's just funny, man. Top billing. get out of here, man.
I mean, apparently, like, Jack Lord, like in doing research, like, he also only wanted them to film, like, from his right side, because that was his better side, according to him. Like, apparently he's a bit of a diva.
Oh, come on.
And if you watch the original Hawaii Five-0, you could see that as well. I've actually heard other stories from actors that have appeared on there, basically, you know, talking about the same kind of stuff.
They should have cast Jack Lord in License to Kill so that he could die. Spoiler alert. While getting... Bond, Quarrel, and Felix go to a club. And there, Bond gets briefed on the situation by Felix. All of a sudden, Bond notices the photographer from earlier... take a picture of them. So Bond tells Quarrel to go grab that photographer, bring her over here. The photographer is interrogated by the group. But the photographer is just like, nope, I'm not saying nothing. Like, apparently, Stop Snitching originated in the 60s, man.
and in Jamaica.
And in Jamaica.
With this organization.
Right. Because they are not, no, they are not fucking around.
So the band in this scene, who plays there's a song called Jump Up that is, famous song from this movie. The band's called the Byron Lee Orchestra or band. I can't remember which one it is specifically. Apparently, like, that band stayed like uber popular in Jamaica from this point up until like 2000, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
So and that was their biggest hit, obviously.
Well, yeah. No, nobody really gives a damn unless, you know, Bond James Bond is there. That's cool, man. So the group questioned what kind of person can instill fear and loyalty into people like that, you know, because even then in the 60s, like, whoa, like, usually people just kind of flip on us whenever we put bass in our voice. I don't know what's going on.
Like, this girl's willing to get her arm broken by this giant black man.
Right, right. Who says captain all the time. He refers to, okay. He refers to men, you know, with the proper noun of captain. Hey, captain. And it's not like a thick Jamaican act. Hey, captain. Like, it's not. Hey, captain. Hey, captain. Like, come on now. This is a Captain Crunch you're dealing with here. What are you doing?
She tried everything she could to get away too. Like, she even took like a flash bulb and
broke it on the table,
cut him in the face, cut Quarrel in the face.
And Quarrel just he takes his hand and looks at his blood. That blood is super bright, by the way.
Yeah. Like, well, had to be seen in the dark nightclub.
I mean, that blood looked like that wasn't Red Dye number 5, man. That was like, that was like vermilion. You know what I mean? He took that. I thought he was about to lick it. Like, I thought he was about to lick his blood off of his hand like a creep. Because he looks kind of creepy there.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Because, like, I remember earlier in the movie when she tries to take the picture of Bond and can't do it. Like, she like, takes a flashbulb and, like, licks the flashbulb. And I remember, like, Marguerite Lawars is the actress who played, they call her Freelance, because that's what she refers to herself as. But she's like, you know, I think Terrence Young asked her to do that, and she's like, why? He's like, well, it'll look evil, like, if you do that on screen.
Yeah, it just look creepy, man.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like you sit on those things for pleasure. Like, what are you doing? So the CIA has traced a mysterious radio jamming signal of American rockets to the vicinity of Jamaica where they are. But aerial photography cannot determine the exact location of its origin. Quarrel reveals that he had been guiding strangways around a bunch of nearby islands to collect mineral samples. And one of those islands is Crab Key Island. Dun, 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 dun. We come to find out that Felix tells Bond that, you know, the island is well protected by a Chinese man named Dr. No. A Chinese man played by Joseph Wiseman from Canada. So
apparently none of the... So in this movie, because Dr. No is half Chinese... they actually had, like, none of the actors who were playing, like, the Asian characters were actually Asian. Like, they had to make them up to look Chinese, or to at least kind of look Chinese. So this is, you know, we're talking about the photographer, the government house secretary later on in the film, the chauffeur from earlier. All of them were definitely not Asian in any way, shape, or form.
They yellow-faced them.
Kind of, sort of.
They yellow-faced him. Like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're not Chinese. You just have a bunch of eyeliner all the way across to your face to around your temple. Get out of here, man. Fucking. So, anyway, that just really, I was like, come on, man. Really? Like, you couldn't find any Asian people? And then later on, they found a lot of Asian people. They were like, let's make James Bond Asian. Like, wait, what?
Oh, my goodness. That'll be a fun one. We'll see you in March for that particular one.
Goodness gracious. So Bond follows a lead that he found at Strangway's house and ends up meeting Professor Dent that Brad spoke about earlier. He meets with Dent, who says that he took a look at the samples that Strangway brought him, and he was like, these are ordinary rocks. I can't remember the significance of the radioactive rocks. I guess it's...
Well, because it would prove that the island is radioactive and there's more going on. Yeah, it means that there would be like a nuclear reactor.
So Dent...
By the way, Professor Dent is really shitty at being inconspicuous about this stuff. Like Professor Dent, like you know... Like, just from watching him interact, that he's full of shit.
Right. He's like, I mean, goodness gracious, man. Like, he might as well have just been sweating profusely. And, like, it's like, come on, buddy. You got no chill, man. Like, you gotta play it cool, man.
Now, I have some more fun trivia for you, Micah. So Professor Dent was played by an actor named Anthony Dawson. He was who was a good friend with Terrence Young, the director of the film. He was also in two other Bond movies as well. Do you know the role that he played?
I do not know the role that he played.
So Anthony Dawson would also be the hand stroking the cat of Blofeld in From Russia with Love and Thunderball.
Really?
Yes, he's the unseen Blofeld.
That's funny, man.
Some would argue the best Blofeld. So if you want to know who did the best portrayal of Ernst Stavro Blofeld, Anthony Dawson is your man.
That's funny. That's cool, man. When I make it big, I'm gonna put all you guys in a movie. Just your hands, though.
Just my hands, nothing else.
You're gonna be legendary for your hands. So Bond meets with Dent. Dent is like, nah, they just rocks. They just rocks, man. Rocks and nothing else. And then Bond is like, all right, Dent. And then he leaves. Dent gets spooked by this, and he travels to Crab Key Island in broad daylight. When he gets to the island, he sits in an empty room where he is addressed by Dr. No via loudspeaker.
So let's talk about this set, because in all the scenes in Dr. No, this interrogation room is probably the most iconic, probably the most famous, because you have this this just gray room with a chair in the corner, but it has like a humongous skylight that has a grate on it that, you know, the light shines in and makes a distinctive pattern. They film the room perfectly because they have the camera in one corner of the room, basically. Mm-hmm. So the room looks much larger than it actually is. And what's funny is that so Ken Adam was the set designer for many of the James Bond films, and he was credited for, you know, making a lot of the feel of those Bond movies. Because his sets, like, everyone remembers, you know, the volcano and the giant submarine in The Spy Who Loved Me and you know, his iconic sets, the chess tournament room in actually that wasn't even him in From Russia with Love, the Rumpus Room in Goldfinger, like that was all Ken Adam. This set, the interrogation room set, was the last set that he made, and he was out of money, so like he made it simple out of necessity because he literally had like no money left to design anything grandiose.
You know what? It looks excellent. Like, you know, look, all the CGI in the world nowadays, and like, that's all you need. A room with a chair. Like, because it's creepy, man. Like, and then you're being addressed by this disembodied voice. Like, it's kind of spooky, man.
Well, and Dent in the scene also helps this because he looks... like terrified.
Oh, he plays it excellently.
Yeah, like he does not want to be there whatsoever. He knows he's fucking up by being there in the first place. he doesn't want to face Dr. No's wrath. So, yeah, Dent plays it note perfect.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, it's a really cool scene, man. Really cool scene. So Dr. No, he expresses his displeasure at Dent for visiting Crab Key Island at daylight, and two, failing to get rid of James Bond. So, again, the creepy factor in this room. Dr. No says, you see that cage over there? Yeah, pick it up. And he goes over to the cage, and there's a big-ass tarantula in it.
Dent wants no part of that fucking
cage
either.
Right, exactly,
he's
man.
Just like, he's like, I don't think so. And Doctor's like, no, seriously, pick it up, jerk. And you see him like holding it like a foot away from his body at all times, that kind of thing.
I would too, man. Damn all that, man. So we got to Bond back at his hotel, and this is where that payoff comes, where he knows that someone's been in his place because he checks his briefcase where he had the talcum powder, and he checks his closet, and the strand of hair is missing. So he knows something's up, so he's on his guard. That night, when he's asleep, he is suddenly awoken by the tarantula that was placed in his hotel room. I'd be freaked the fuck out, man.
So this is a very very fortunate plan, because I can't imagine that Dent sneaked into the room itself and put the tarantula in the bed. So basically, he like dumped it in through a window and is hoping that the tarantula goes for Bond.
Yeah, Dent is a bit of a bitch.
Yeah, not a very. I'm just saying, not a very foolproof plan.
He's like, all right, you know, it'll happen eventually.
So in this scene too, as the tarantula crawls up Connery's body, you can definitely see there's like some plate glass between him and the tarantula.
Oh yeah,
it's very obvious.
And look, I'm not even mad at him. Like, you get out of here, man. Oh, it's defanged. I don't care. You get that fucking thing away from me, man.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Nope, can't do it. I can see his fucking Scottish ass now. Oh, you got that fucking thing away from me. Bond is freaked out by this spider, and he does what anybody would do. The second that spider gets off his body, he leaps out of bed. I think Sean Connery was in that scene, and they said, oh, yeah, Sean, by the way, there's a spider in the bed. We forgot to take it out. And then he just leaps out, because that is some genuine bed leaping.
Some real terror.
That is some terror, man. Like, I'm looking at the scene now. Like, that, he almost falls out of bed. Like, that ain't acting, man. That's not acting.
I love the musical cue here.
Yes, because every time he hits he grabs a shoe, and every time he hits the ground, you know, hitting the spider, you get a musical beat. Dun, 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 dun.
But now he's pissed. Those motherfuckers tried to kill me again.
With a spider? What kind of bitch move is that? Bond goes back to Government House, and he tries to get some files on Dr. No. And there he notices an Asian secretary spying on them.
He also picks up a Geiger counter here.
Oh, that's right. He does pick up the Geiger counter. So with said Geiger counter, before he leaves, he catches the Asian woman spying on them. And he's like, oh, what are you spying on us for? And he's like, oh, no, I'm not spying. Like, they're not even, I mean, part of me is glad that, I'm upset that they're yellow facing it, but I'm glad that they're not like, oh, no, Miss Bond. No, no, I not do that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad they're not going the full Asian stereotype.
And he totally maxed on her too.
Oh yeah, look, he was like, look.
Yeah, she's like, you're a stranger. I don't know if I want to eat dinner with you. He's like, no, you do.
I mean, look, I know women like a confident man, but, you know, there's confidence and then there's, no, you're coming with me. We're having dinner. 3 o'clock. My place. Be there. Like, oh, okay. Like, they're doing it out of fear.
Well, she's got to keep him in line.
Apparently. So using the Geiger counter that that he took from Government House, Bond discovers some radioactive traces on Quarles' boat. Bond convinces Quarles to take him to Crab Key Island later on. So Bond is on his way to, I guess, eat this Asian woman out, this Asian woman. And he gets into a bit of a car chase. And this is some old school filmmaking here.
It is. It's a pretty bad green screen effect.
It's a really bad green screen effect. Like, I need actors to realize, even if they are, like, in a fake car and a green screen effect, like, nobody drives with their hands going left and right, left and right, left and right while on the steering wheel. Nobody does that. I mean, good Lord, man. And it's not just this movie. Every actor who's in a fake car does that for some reason. Like, doo-doo-doo, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. Like they're slaloming around down a hill or something like that. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, so the three blind mice are trying to catch up to him and run him off the road.
And they do a poor job because the three blind mice eventually get run off the road, and all of a sudden their car blows up. Like you just fall down a cliff, guys. Like all of a sudden the entire inside of the car is on fire. And then there's another quip where this construction worker comes up. He's like, "How did this happen?" And James is like, "Oh, they were on their way to the funeral." Like, no, buddy. How did that car all of a sudden just spontaneously combust as it's falling down a hill? Like, gravity doesn't make things just catch fire, man.
The best part is, like, the construction worker even gives him, like, a little, like, "Really, dude?" Look at him look when he says that. Apparently, they threw those quips in, A, for some levity, but they were worried that the censors wouldn't allow certain scenes to be in there if they weren't a little bit more lighthearted.
Yeah, death. Let's make death funny. That way we can keep it in a movie. So, Bond, after the car chase, meets the Asian secretary, who, for some reason, comes out of the shower wearing high heels. I don't understand that at all. Do white women, when they are in yellow face, take showers with high heels on? Or did she step out of the shower and high heels were the first thing there?
Maybe she was just wearing the heels in the shower.
Maybe she was just wearing the heels in the shower. I swear to God, man. Anyone, people do some weird stuff. People did some weird stuff in the 60s, man. I would not be surprised if that was just like a design choice. So the Asian woman comes out wearing high heels and she is surprised to find Bond at the door. Bond is like, "What, you invited me up here?" And she's like, okay, I got to pick up the phone real quick." And James does this real creepy thing with the towel that she was washing her, drying her hair with. Like, he just takes it and just kind of sniffs it. And I'm like,
he likes your shampoo.
Apparently,
I really likes it.
I don't know. That just kind of creeped me out a little bit, man. I don't know. Eventually, Bond has sex with this woman, and
what's fucked up here? Like, he knows that she's like an enemy agent.
Oh yeah,
and he knows that she has to keep him there. So, well, what else are we gonna do?
Well, you know, I might as well get something out of it. James Bond is a dick, guys. James Bond is a dick. He's so much of a dick that he has sex with this woman and then calls a quote-unquote taxi because, you know, he's like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to leave because I've just had sex with you and now I'm done.
Well, no, he was,
and it turns out
they were going to go out to dinner.
Yeah, they were going to go out to dinner. It turns out that the taxi that he called was, in fact, the police. And he has sex with this woman, knowing that she doesn't necessarily want to, but just because he could. And then he has her taken to jail. Like, that's some pimp ass shit. Could you imagine?
He gets spat on too.
Yeah, he gets spat on. Like that's the very least. Like, if I was that woman, I'd be putting up a fight. I'd be using that fake Chinese, you know, kung fu to do something, man.
So, but he hangs out because he figures that somebody's coming for him.
And he was right. So he investigates the woman's house, and he realizes somebody's coming for him. And a couple of hours later, door opens up. James sees a gun, and pop, 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 pop. It turns out that the guy is Dent trying to come and kill him because he's like, man, that foolproof spider plan didn't work. Dent is interrogated by James and is subsequently killed.
I love this scene.
This scene is so fucking badass. Like, this is what James Bond is, man. Like, he's so cool. Like, I just want to kill somebody and be that cool doing it.
Drop it, Professor, and behind you.
Funny, I thought you'd turn up sooner or later.
They'll talk.
But of course. And I was suspicious at the Queen's Club anyhow, when it turned out you were the only one who'd seen Strangway's new secretary.
And then later at the lab, you made no reference to the fact that Strangway's samples were radioactive.
Very clever, Mr. Bond. You're up against more than you know. You shoot me and you'll end up like Strangway's.
And you killed him?
He was killed, but never mind how.
Who are you working for, Professor?
Well, you might as well know, as you won't live to use the information. I'm working for...
Mr. Smith and Wesson. And you've had your six.
So basically, while he's talking to Dent, he's pretending not to notice that Dent is sliding his gun towards him so he can pick it up and shoot Bond real quick.
Dude is like, I got you now. And James is like, no, you see, that's a Smith & Wesson, and you had your six.
And then just fucking shoots him.
Oh, that's so fucking awesome, man. I don't look. That's awesome, man. I don't know what to tell you. If you don't like that, you're something.
I mean, some people don't because he kills him in cold blood. But he was... about to get fucking murdered.
He was about to get murdered, man. Like it's like, nah, man. Like if someone, it's like running the score up in a ball game. Like if you had the opportunity, you would too. And he's got a license to kill, guys.
That's right.
He's got a license to kill. It's okay when he does it, but if your license is expired, you can't do it. You got to take the test over. And then pay the $135, you know, re-registration fee, I guess. I don't know how licenses to kill work. That night, or later on that night, Quarrel takes Bond to the island, to Crab Island, Crab Key Island, by boat.
Now, there's a funny scene here where Felix kind of drops them off to the point where they have to row in. And then he's like, hey, I'll be back in 12 hours with the Marines. And Bond's like, no, give me 48 hours. They were definitely on the island for like 3 days, though. Yeah. And the Marines just showed up at the end of the film.
Good old U.S. of A. So Quarrel was hesitant about coming to this island because he heard stories of a dragon.
Oh, he's seen it, apparently.
Yeah, he's seen a dragon in the island. And
Bond's like, get the fuck out of
Bond
here.
Bond is like, dragons don't exist. Like, what are you talking about with your second world mumbo jumbo? Get out of here. So night turns to morning. James is taking a siesta on the beach there. And in the morning, he is awoken by a woman in a white bikini collecting seashells. This woman's name is Honey Rider. She is, this is an infamous scene. She is one of the quintessential Bond girls. When you think Bond girl, everyone remembers Ursula Andrews, who played Honey Rider.
Underneath the mango tree, my honey and me.
Who is that?
It's all right. I'm not supposed to be here either. I take it you're not. Are you alone?
What are you doing here? Looking for shells?
No, I'm just looking.
Stay where you are.
I promise I won't steal your shells.
I promise you, you won't either.
This woman, I don't know where she's from, but apparently she doesn't have, she has a thick accent from where she's from, because I know, and perhaps you know, perhaps you know the real voice behind this person, but this is not this woman's voice.
She is super dubbed.
Yeah, yes. She is incredibly dubbed.
Yeah, she's from Sweden, Ursula Andress is, and they definitely had to dub her lines because no one would have been able to understand what she's saying. Let me see if I can find the person who dubbed her.
Nikki Vanderzil?
Does
that sound right?
That doesn't sound right, but that's what IMDb says.
So, Nikki Vanderzil. And apparently she had a different voice for her singing, because she's singing like under the mango tree. And Diana Coupland is the singing voice for Honey Rider, apparently.
Yeah, the early Bond movies would use a lot of dubbed dialogue. Goldfinger's entire dialogue was all dubbed. Largo's entire dialogue was dubbed in Thunderball.
And like, so it's really blatant too. Like, it's like, it's, I mean, look, it's a product of the times, right? But it's just really, really noticeable, especially with Goldfinger.
Oh yeah.
Ah, goodness gracious. But yeah, man, they, in the '60s, you could literally hire women just because they look pretty. Like, they literally hired two ugly women to voice this beautiful woman, and because they only hired this beautiful woman just because she was pretty. No acting talent required. Like, you look good in a bikini.
He also lays some serious game on her too.
Oh, look, he sees this woman in a bikini coming out the water. And he's like, yo, I've got to hit me that. I got to hit that. That is amazing. That looks really good. I got to get up in them guts. That's my James Bond game, guys. That's how I landed my wife, with a terrible Scottish accent and horrible lines. Honey is very distrustful of James. She's like, who are you, buddy?
Yeah, she trusts him real quick once they bring up a troll boat around.
Yeah. So a lot of what we have here is, I don't know, this part of the movie kind of felt like filler a little bit to me. Because a whole lot of nothing is going on here. I guess the boat coming up and firing at them, thereby destroying her boat, is reason enough for them to have Honey keep going with them. But the character seemed very strong-willed anyway. Like, the character seemed like she would follow them no matter what. So all of this seems kind of like filler to me. Like, they're, like, Honey is talking about the dragon, and she's like, have you ever seen a praying mantis eat her mate after they make love? I have, and I've seen a dragon. Like, okay, lady.
Well, there's also a scene where Bond kills another guard, and it kind of puts her off So I guess you're establishing her character. But then, like, 2 seconds later, she tells a story about how she basically tortured a rapist.
Right. So you know what it's like to have to kill somebody. Like, this guy was coming to kill you guys. Like, I had to do it. He said I had to do it. So I don't know. A lot of, like I said, a lot of this, like, island stuff, this little cat and mouse game is, seems like filler to me. We do, but like you said, we get the backstory of this character, but which, you know, I'm not going to say that's a bad thing because we need, you know, characters do need to be fleshed out a bit, especially when they're introduced in the third act of a movie.
Right.
Which for all the, for as much as I like Dr. No as a villain, the Canadian Jew, Chinese man, as much as I like him as a villain, he literally comes in the 11th hour.
Right. He just has a presence before him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they do a good job with that presence, but I kind of want to see, you know, this is a movie. Movies you show, you know, you don't necessarily tell. But I think they did an okay job. I just wish I saw more of him. But yeah, we get some backstory on Honey Rider, and it turns out that she was raped, and then she had to go with the dragon tattoo this guy. So that night, Bond, Rider, and Quarrel are attacked by the Dragon of Crab Key, which it turns out is just a big ass tank with a flamethrower on it. And
made up to look like a dragon.
Made up to look like a dragon, but I mean, come on, man. Like, if you can't tell that's a tank, like, maybe you saw it at night, but if you saw it at night, then you won't be able to see the paint on the tank that makes it look like a dragon. And if you saw it during the day and you thought that was a dragon, you're a dummy. What I'm saying is Quarrel and Honey Rider and apparently all of Jamaica are dummies because they think that dragons exist. Anyway, Quarrel's dumbass shoots the goddamn tank with a pistol, and the tank is just like, what are you doing? And then the guy in the tank incinerates Quarrel with the flamethrower.
He just kind of sat there and took it, too.
Yeah, he just kind of sat there and took a flamethrower to the face. Like, what, Quarrel, what are you doing? Run. Like, you're on an island. You're at a beach. Run to the water, Quarrel. Do something, man. Please. But, you know, alas, Quarrel is dead. And Bond and Honey are taken prisoner. At the base, or whatever you call this, at the underwater base, because that's what spy movies need to have. They need to have underwater bases.
Of course.
Bond and Ryder are decontaminated and taken to some living quarters, some really, really nice, like, 60s underwater style. Like, there's rocks all over the place, and there's, like, carpeting and some really, really, a really uncomfortable looking chair and stuff like
that. They had a full wardrobe too.
They had a full wardrobe of Chinese outfits because Dr. No is Chinese, but he isn't. And they're taken to these living quarters. They're told, oh, have some, you know, there's some food here if you want. Bond thinks that the place might be bugged. So they start whispering a little bit, and they help themselves to some coffee. Turns out that coffee was drugged.
Shocker.
Dun, 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 dun.
Now, there's a funny scene that happens here, because they have, while Bond is asleep from being drugged, Dr. No walks into his room. You still don't see his face. All you see are his weird penguin flipper hands. And he, like, just kind of looks at Bond and picks up the covers and tucks them in.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. What happened? Like, what was that? Like, first of all, they pass out on the couch, and she passes out on the couch, and Bond looks at the coffee, is like, oh, damn, coffee. You bested me again, coffee. And then slams the coffee down, and then he passes out on the floor. Then they fade to black, and then they fade in, and James is in the bed. And like you said, creepy ass Dr. No comes in and just kind of tucks him in at night. Like, oh, I'm going to tuck you in, Mr. Bond. Like, what? I don't know what.
I mean, the scene just builds. It tries to build his mystique more, but you're about to introduce him.
Right. Like,
in a second anyway.
Like, I don't know. It's really, really weird. Like, it's really weird. Like, I want to forget that this happened. Like, did you just want to show his hands? Like, you see his hands when you meet him. Right. And you get an explanation about those hands. Like, now it's just like, what the hell is... I don't know. Anyway. When they wake up, they do a wardrobe change. And they go and they meet Dr. No. And Dr. No's intro, I mean, it's kind of cool, man. It's kind of cool. Like I said, he gets introduced when there's like 20 minutes in the movie left.
Right.
Which kind of sucked, but because I really would have liked to see this character on screen more.
Now, Dr. No would be the first in what kind of turns out to be a Bond tradition where they build up something and make it look really larger than life, and then the actual reveal is quite disappointing.
Yeah, like, like I'm expecting, like you see those like robo penguin flippers, and I'm expecting, and you see, and this guy has this incredible voice, right? And I'm expecting, I don't know what I'm expecting. I'm not expecting a white guy in an Asian style kung fu outfit.
With like Q-tip shoes.
Right. But nonetheless, Dr. No is revealed. And did you ever at one point watch The Big Bang Theory?
Maybe some of the earlier episodes, but haven't watched anything lately.
So I'm the same way. Do you know the character Sheldon Cooper?
Yes.
Sheldon Cooper kind of reminds me of like Dr. No. Like the guy's.
Well, Dr. No is an extreme germaphobe.
Right.
Obviously.
He's an extreme germaphobe. He's a genius. He kind of has that look. He just kind of reminds me of Sheldon Cooper. I don't know. I just found it amusing. So they all sit down to eat, and this is something else. This is another trope in not just Bond movies, but like most spy movies. The main antagonist and the protagonist are just chilling. Okay, let's have a
very civilized.
Let's have a civilized conversation about this nefarious plan I'm going to do, and what you think you're going to do to try and stop me. This interaction is actually the best part of the movie for me.
It's a pretty good scene.
It's a wonderful scene because this guy, James Bond, is just being a dick.
And he really is. He's trying to poke the bear.
He is, man. And Dr. No is just like, I know what you're trying to do. You're not gonna provoke me. Like, I'm just way too smart for this. And James Bond is just like, well, I'm dick, 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 dick. I'm a dick. And then Dr. No is like, oh, God damn it. Like, I thought that you were different. But you're just a fucking dummy. You're just a dick.
This is also where we get to hear about Spectre for the first time.
Spectre, the special executive for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion.
Clumsy effort, Mr. Bond. You disappoint me. I'm not a fool, so please do not treat me as one. And that table knife, please put it back.
Well, we can't all be geniuses, can we? Tell me, does the toppling of American missiles really compensate for having no hands?
Missiles are only the first step to prove our power.
Our power? With your disregard for human life, you must be working for the East.
East, West, just points of the compass, each as stupid as the other. I'm a member of Spectre.
Spectre?
Spectre. Special Executive for Counterintelligence, Terrorism, Revenge, Extortion. The four great cornerstones of power, headed by the greatest brains in the world.
Correction. Criminal brains.
The successful criminal brain is always superior. It has to be.
Why become criminal? I'm sure the West would welcome a scientist of your caliber.
The Americans are fools. I offered my services, they refused. So did the East. Now they can both pay for their mistake.
World domination. Same old dream. Our asylums are full of people who think they're Napoleon or God.
You persist in trying to provoke me, Mr. Bond. I could have had you killed in the swamp.
And why didn't you?
I thought you less stupid. Usually when a man gets in my way... But you were different. You cost me time, money, effort. You damaged my organization and my pride. I was curious to see what kind of a man you were. I thought there might even be a place for you with Spectre.
Well, I'm flattered. I prefer the revenge department. Of course, my first job would be finding the man who killed Strangways and Quarrel.
Unfortunately, I misjudged you. You are just a stupid policeman. Whose luck is run out?
What terrorist organization do you know of says that they are terrorists in their terrorist name?
It's the one that doesn't give a shit. Like, that's why we're here.
It's funny to me. Like, terrorists don't think that they are terrorists, except for Spectre. They know specifically what they want. Counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge and extortion. That is what's on. Those are the four pillars of Spectre. I love how ridiculous Spectre is. Like, it's
well,
so
in the
funny.
Books, it was, I think it was Smursh.
Smursh?
Yeah. But that was a mostly Russian thing, and they didn't want to offend their neighbors to the east.
I'm offended by the word Smursh. Good Lord. But yeah, this scene is incredible, and it is what makes the movie for me. It's the highlight of the movie for me.
Now, they also show like Dr. Noon has super crushing power in his hands. Mm-hmm. This never gets referenced anymore in the movie.
Well, I think that's because there's only like 15 minutes left.
That's true.
But yes, just in case you thought those black things on his hand were just like some funky gloves. No, he loses his hands, and he has these like robo hands put on, able to crush, a brass monkey.
Now I love this too. He tells his, guards to soften Bond up a little bit and they start beating the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Later in the prison scene, you see he's wearing his jacket and it's ripped. But then when he takes the jacket off, he's got like an undershirt that's torn to shit. So like, did they take the jacket off and then put it back on once they beat him up?
They're like, look, this is a really, really nice jacket. And Dr. No is going to have my ass if anything happens to this jacket. Like, this is part of the Dr. No collection. So I'm going to have to ask you to please take that jacket off, sir, so that I can beat the crap out of you. Very similar.
But your holding cell is cold, so put it back on while you sleep.
We wouldn't want you to get a chill. Dr. No still is. Dr. No is not done with you yet. So could you please just, you know, you didn't know this, but Dr. No made sure you were as snug as a bug in a rug while you were knocked unconscious from his poison coffee. Oh, that damn coffee. It's just so fucking funny to me. So here's Dr. No's plan. Dr. No wants to disrupt Project Mercury, which was I just had it up here. Dr. No wants to disrupt Project Mercury, which was the first human spaceflight program of the United States that ran from 1958 to 1963.
Look at you dropping trivia bombs.
I gotta contribute something. So he wants to disrupt Project Mercury, the Project Mercury space launch from Cape Canaveral with his atomic-powered radio beam. Like you said, He is taken away, put in a holding cell, and Honey Rider is taken away. We cut to Bond in prison in his holding cell. He manages to escape through the biggest vent I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, come on, man. You can have a picnic in that vent, man. Like, you can have an orgy in that vent. Like, he can damn near stand up in that vent. Like, it is humongous.
Well, and also, they get in there. So, like, the vent cover's electrocuted. But it's, he shorts it out by touching it once. It's not a very good safeguard.
It's not a very good safeguard at all. And then he's like, all right, well, let me take my shoe just in case the, it's still electrified because my electrically insulating, house slippers provided by Dr. No will be able to protect me from this grate. So he enters this just ridiculously large vent and makes his way to the outside. So Bond is able to, he reaches the other end of the vent and he kicks it, and this time it wasn't electrocuted, you know, it didn't have any electrical charge running through it. And he hops out and he sees a guy in a radiation suit and he proceeds to choke that guy out, that poor son of a bitch who was probably there just taking a leak, just trying to get through the workday, man. And all of a sudden, here comes this fucking thuggish policeman coming to choke him out. He takes his radiation suit and walks into the control room disguised as Chang, who was probably another white guy in yellow face. All the white guys in yellow face, this was the perfect disguise for Sean Connery to be in. Just a white guy. Oh, no, my name is Chang. I'm Chinese. Disguised as the worker, Bond finds his way to the control center. Which is a multi-level room full of high-tech instrumentation with an atomic reactor set into the floor and is overseen by Dr. No from a command console. Dr. No is going through all his checks to get ready to fire his atomic-powered radio beam at the space shuttle. When Bond overloads the nuclear reactor just as the American rocket is about to take off. A very 60s-style fight ensues.
It was.
Like, I'm just waiting for the Batman-esque onomatopoeia to just pop onto the screen. Bam, pow, clang.
I mean, everything in the reactor room was labeled like the Batcave as well.
I mean, how else are you going to know? Like, you know, you have to label, you know, instrumentation and it's just funny, man. Like, the 60s was a funny time for movies, man, for movies and TV. So there's a James Bond overloads the reactor. Everybody starts panicking. Dr. No loses his cool. And he runs over and starts to fight James. James apparently has an iron chin, because Dr. No hits him with one of his robo fists. James Bond just kind of takes it and then, you know, starts fighting back. Yeah, man, like, what are those things made of? They're able to crush brass, but they can't break this dude's jaw when you double axe handle him in the face. Come on, man. The fight between them ensues, and between Bond and Dr. No, Bond pushes Dr. No into the reactor's cooling vat, and Dr. No boils to death. James spends way too much time running around trying to find Honey Rider. While he's doing that, by the way, he's running, right? And he sees a guy, just another worker there, just trying to fucking, just trying to get out, right? Bond trips this dude. He trips him. He intentionally trips this dude, just trying to get away. And he's like, where's the girl I came in with? Where's honey? Honey, where is she? And he's like, I don't know where she is, man.
And he punches him in the face.
Like that's the, God damn it. James Bond is a dick, guys. James Bond is a dick. Jesus Christ.
He's got a license to beat up people.
He's got a license to be a dick. I don't know. Fuck you then. Pow! Punches him in the face. He grabs this other woman. Again, just trying to go, just trying to get the hell out of Dodge because the reactor that he overloaded is about to blow up. And he finds this woman and he's like, Where's the girl I came in with? The woman tells him, she's like, she's in 12. I gotta go. No, nope. Not dick-ass James Bond. No, you're gonna show me where she is. Like, what the fuck, dude? She just told you, let this poor woman who's probably trying to get home to her kids.
She's just earning a paycheck, man.
No, you're gonna show me where she is. So he essentially takes this woman hostage to try and find Honey Rider. I don't know why Honey isn't dead. That's another thing that these spy movies do. They don't just kill people. Like it's a common trope. I get it, but I still don't understand it to this day. Like you had no reason to keep Honey Rider alive, and then they had her chained up on a ramp, and I guess they were gonna drown her.
Yeah, that was the key. There was actually originally there were supposed to be crabs around her that were supposed to attack her. But when they got the crab shipped in, they were all frozen and dead and looked like shit. So they had to make it up on the fly.
That's funny. Eventually, he grabs Honey. He unties her. And they make their way outside onto above sea level. And James sees a couple more workers just trying to get the hell out of Dodge, man. They don't know this guy. They don't know who he is. He could have been one of the workers. They don't know, right? James Bond jumps into a boat and just knocks out and throws overboard
over the side.
These two dudes. Like, y'all could have shared this boat, man. They have no reason to kill you. Everything is literally going up in flames. Everybody just wants to get out. And then there's one, I'm looking at the scene now. He knocks one guy out, then he knocks it, and the guy is just slumped over in the boat. He knocks another guy out because he's coming after James because James Bond just knocked out his buddy for no fucking reason. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? James punches this guy and immediately throws him off the boat. Honey gets control of the boat, starts driving away, and James is like, oh, wait, this dude who's incapacitated and no threat to me whatsoever is still on the boat. I'm going to knock him off. James Bond is a dick, guys. James Bond is a dick.
We get a massive explosion of the facility now, too.
You get a massive explosion. James and Honey are awash at sea. They're like, what are we supposed to do? James, you know, sex on the brain Bond is like, we can get it in. We ain't got nothing else to do. And apparently Honey's down. Honey's DTF. And she is like, all right. So they have a celebratory makeout session. And then we cut to Felix eventually getting there with the Marines. And James is like, oh, what took this so long? And it was like, traffic or whatever. and they're like, oh, well, give us a tow. And they start giving him a tow. And James is getting horny again. So he undoes the line, starts making out with Honey Rider again, and then we fade to black. The end.
Yeah, James Bond is not a big thinker about logistics when he's got sex on the brain.
Yeah, man, he all the blood rushes from one head to the other. Man, he's just not thinking.
Felix is like the friend that when it's very obvious that you're about to get down with somebody, Felix is like, yeah, some shit's about to happen now, huh? And Bond's like, get the fuck out of my face.
Oh, man. But that's it. That's Dr. No. I like this movie, man.
I like it a lot.
I really like Dr. No. It sets a really, really good precedent. Not just for James Bond movies, but for movies of this genre. Like everything, every trope that you see in legit spy movies or spoof spy movies comes largely from this movie.
Right.
And the movie's great, man. I think it still holds up. It's got some slow parts, and yeah, I think it could have been trimmed by like 15 minutes, but
it definitely shows its age. Yeah. Like it looks like a movie that was made in 1962. Yeah. But it still holds up really well. Like the writing's good, the acting's good. It was shot really well.
Yeah.
You know, it was ahead of its time in a lot of ways too.
Yeah, it was.
This movie was made on kind of a shoestring budget for a major movie. Only $1.2 million.
Really?
Was the budget for the entire film, yeah. Huh. And that's only about $9.5 million if you adjusted for inflation today.
Huh. Wow, that is kind of a shoestring budget. But, I mean, you know, movie magic, right? Like, I'm assuming that set at the end that blew up was a model.
Of course.
It looked good, man. Like more movies need to do like models and practical effects and stuff like that.
Well, that's kind of a hallmark of the Bond series too. Like they've always done great miniature work.
Yeah, yeah. So this movie's pretty great, man. If you like spy movies, like if for whatever reason you've never seen this movie, check it out, man. It's good. It's really, really good.
Now, where do you kind of put this in your Bond pantheon?
Oh, man. I would have to. So what I do is I have to kind of break the Bond pantheon by actor.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of Sean Connery's better James Bond movies. I think this holds true with a majority of the Bond movies by actor. That the more they do, the worse they are for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is great, man. Like it's no. Those first three movies were great. Starting with Thunderball for me is when things start to take a bit of a dip. Even though I kind of like Thunderball, things start taking a bit of a dip. But out of the Sean Connery movies. Maybe three.
That's about right.
Yeah, maybe three.
So I look at these overall. I would say that Dr. No is definitely a top 10 movie. It's probably outside of the top five, though. Actually, it's definitely out of the top five.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that.
But it's still really good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it flies by, too. Like, this seems like the quickest of all the Bond movies.
Yeah, when I looked at this, it was like 150 minutes. I'm like, wow, that's it? Like these. I'm so used to these movies being almost 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That this one, and like I said, this could have you could have shaved like 10-15 minutes off this movie, and it would have been fine.
Oh yeah.
So it's it still holds up, man.
Yeah, it's a great first effort. When we talk about From Russia with Love on our next episode, I think we'll kind of start to see the Bond formula fall into face. Yeah. Sorry, fall into place, rather. Yeah. But for a first time out, and when they weren't sure if this was going to be a successful franchise or not, this was an amazing effort.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. any more trivia before we close out?
I think I got it all in.
Did you know that... I mean, I guess this is common knowledge, but Sean Connery is wearing a toupee in all of his James Bond appearances.
You know, I've heard that. I don't know if I believe it's true until his later movies. I really don't. Like, if it's a toupee, it's a really good toupee.
If it's a toupee in this movie, it is really good. Some of the later ones, I'm like...
Like, Diamonds Are Forever, I would believe
you.
Yeah,
yeah.
And definitely Never Say Never Again.
Oh, good Lord. those might have to be like specials.
Yeah.
Once we get through the main, roster of movies, we'll come back and look at that shit. But thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for being a subscriber. You can tune into all of our shows on the Nerdpocalypse Network, the flagship show, the Nerdpocalypse, Dense Pixels, which Brad and I are on along with Terrence, Black on Black Cinema, Tabletop for Two, Airing of Grievances, Mouthful of Toast,
Look forward.
No Time to Bleed. We're trying to, and now The Men with the Golden Tongues. We're trying to give you some more content. And we thank you for being subscribers.
Yes, very much.
And we will see you next month.
Yes, The Men with the Golden Tongues will return in From Russia with Love.
See ya.